Case number 21-1797, Karen Kemeth Lisrael, Jewish National Fund et al., appellant, versus Education for Just Peace in the Middle East, doing business as U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights. Mr. Lewin for the appellant, Mr. Maas for the appellee.
Morning, Mr. Lewin.
You may
proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court. This is an appeal from a dismissal by the district judge of a complaint under the Anti-Terrorism Act, three claims made on behalf of American citizens residing in southern Israel, and three common law claims made on behalf of Karen Kayemet Lisrael, which is the fund that plants trees in southern Israel. And the district judge dismissed the complaint, all six claims, and the grounds that he stated for dismissal are clearly, in our view, reversible in light of this court's decision in the Atchley case, which certainly involved very gross violations of the anti-terrorism statute. Indeed, it appears to us that this is a case which follows a fortiori from the reversal in the Atchley case, because in Atchley, the defendants were pharmaceutical companies that were alleged to have participated in violations of the Anti-Terrorism Act, both direct and aiding and abetting provisions. But they were major pharmaceutical companies. In this case, the defendant is an American 501c3 entity, which takes contributions and which end up being tax deductible, and sends the funds to entities that clearly are associated with foreign terrorist organizations like Hamas and have a much closer relation in terms of.
May I ask you about that, Mr. Lewin?
Yes.
So I understand your complaint to be alleging that, I'm calling it USCPR, donates money to the BNC, and that the BNC has a member, which is the PNIF, and the PNIF has members that are foreign terrorist organizations, including Hamas. And I'm wondering what your theory is as to BNC. USCPR gives money to BNC. Is your theory that BNC is an intermediary to terrorist organizations, or that BNC itself is a front for Hamas?
Well, we do say, and the evidence, of course, that will be available and we hope will be established in the way of discovery, would be that BNC would itself be a front for Hamas. But
so your theory is not an intermediary theory. In Atchley they decided it was a front for terrorists. But it's not an intermediary like a bank, for example, that but your theory is that BNC itself is a front for Hamas, and therefore it's like Atchley and Boehm, that it's a direct contribution of funds to Hamas. By giving to BNC, they're giving money to Hamas. That's your theory?
Yes, that is our theory. But the point is that, as we try to make in our brief, that these are matters that are very carefully concealed by those who are engaged in terrorist activities. Although we think it is a direct front for Hamas, it is a matter of discovery. We should certainly be entitled to proceed with the allegations of a complaint in order to determine precisely what BNC is and what it does.
If you could just tell us then, what are your non-conclusory allegations in your complaint that would establish that BNC is a front for Hamas?
Well, the non-conclusory allegations are the membership of BNC, what its activities are, what its goals are. We allege that its goals are the destruction of the state of Israel.
But you also allege that it is an entity with a single objective, the realization of Palestinian rights, and that it is an organization that argues for freedom of expression, for the right to demonstrate. And so the relationship between that and the goal you ascribe is not
clear.
Is not clear. It's not necessarily on its face plausible.
Well, in lots of ways, that's like the Holy Land Foundation in the Boehm case. When we made the allegation in the case that we brought against the Holy Land Foundation claimed that it was also engaged in substantial charitable activity and not just in financing Hamas. Now, ultimately, we went to trial in that case. But the fact is that at the time the complaint was filed, the Holy Land Foundation, which was then a very generally accepted charity, was claiming that it was engaged in other activity beyond the violations of the Anti-Terrorism Act. And our point is that we should be able, on the basis of a complaint that has been filed in this case, and if one looks at the Atchley opinion and the very standards that the Atchley court laid out with regard to sufficient allegations under both direct liability and aiding and abetting liability under the Anti-Terrorism Act, that in this case, we have more than adequately met the standards in that case. Now, I see I'm into my rebuttal time.
The other way to look at this is not Atchley, because the allegations of proximate cause were much clearer there. It's more like Owen. And you just don't show the connections in your complaint in a way that we saw in Atchley. And it appears to be like what we were looking at in Owens, which was insufficient.
Well, again, this case cannot, we submit, be compared to those in which the claim is made against substantial financial institutions which engage in lots of other activity which is not necessarily connected to the focus of what the terrorist organizations are designed to achieve. I see I'm into my rebuttal time, and I'd like to reserve that if with the court's permission.
All right, we will grant you some rebuttal time, and we'll hear now from Ms. Shamas. Shamas? Morning.
Good morning.
If you wanted to bring it down just a couple of inches, if you look down,
if you can hear me, this is...
There's a button.
Yes, this is a good height for me, if you can hear me. Okay. May it please the court, my name is Yala Shamas with the Center for Constitutional Rights, or APALE, the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights. The U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, also known as Education for a Just Peace in the Middle East, is a human rights organization that, according to plaintiffs' own allegations, and as the court pointed out today, engages in advocacy for Palestinian rights. To connect this advocacy to terrorism, plaintiffs have weaved a series of attenuated connections, which they attempt to bolster with inflammatory, politically charged insinuations. Now, it bears repeating, and let us be clear about what their theory of liability here, and then repeating Japan's characterization of their allegations, Plaintiffs are proposing that the U.S. campaign, by being the U.S. fiscal sponsor of the Boycott Committee, which is a coalition, quote, one member of which is itself a, quote, coordinating framework of multiple political factions, one of which is Hamas. Plaintiffs provide no factual allegations that any support to the Boycott Committee via that fiscal sponsorship went beyond the Boycott Committee. In fact, there are no facts indicating that funds collected via the fiscal sponsorship even left the United States. Let us be clear, there are only two options.
The Boycott Committee is located in Israel. So if the campaign is collecting money for the Boycott Committee, it's leaving the United States, no?
Well, Your Honor, actually, the complaint refers to a U.S.-based representative of the Boycott Committee, and it doesn't refer to any movement of money or other resources across borders. And there are only two actions that the U.S. campaign allegedly engaged with here, and it bears really underscoring them. So the first is the fiscal sponsorship, which we have discussed starting sometime in at least 2017. And the second is that the U.S. campaign tweeted and emailed its supporters in support of the rights of Palestinian marchers in Gaza, including condemning the killing of 14 Palestinian protesters during those marches, during the first week of those marches. That's it. There are no other allegations about the fiscal sponsorship, about what that entailed. The only other allegations of support are allegations like, quote, working closely with the Boycott Committee and partnering with the Boycott Committee. And that's in complaint 128 and 130. There is nothing else, Your Honor.
But Ms. Diallo, there is a bit of a catch-22 for plaintiffs in situations where they don't have full access to the details of the relationships among the different entities and people. And so why isn't it at least a plausible inference from the complaint that, yes, the money was going overseas to the boycott, and if the boycott had significant representation by this other coalition, and they allege that Hamas had a leading role and a large voice in the boycott, and in order to really pin that down, why wouldn't it be appropriate to allow some discovery into the particulars?
Thank you, Your Honor. And this gets to the question, well, first of all, plaintiffs still need to meet the basic pleading allegations, and they have to provide some factual basis for their conclusory allegations. And the crux of the question is one that this court puts to Mr. Levine, which is, what is your theory here of the relationship between the Boycott National Committee and these various other intermediaries? And let's be clear, there are here at least two, if not three, intermediaries that are alleged. One is the Boycott National Committee, the other one is the PNIF, and then the other one is Hamas. But each one of those, they don't allege requisite control or domination or, to use the Bernhardt language, the close intertwinement. Any of those theories are not really pled here. To be clear, the Boycott Committee is a coalition. The only allegations about the relationship between the Boycott Committee and the PNIF is that it is a member of that coalition. Membership is not control. Membership is not domination, as it was of the Jaysh al-Mahdi in the ministry in Ashley. And similarly, if you look at then the next degree of separation, the PNIF is itself alleged to be a coalition.
Although just to be devil's advocate on this, if Hamas is the controlling power in Gaza and the boycott is standing up for the rights of people in Gaza, Palestinians, to demonstrate and to speak and to have civil rights, civil liberties, why isn't it a fair inference that they and or their proxies would have an outsized role in the boycott, the stated objective of which is to boycott Israel for what it sees as failure to respect the rights of the Palestinian people in Gaza?
Your Honor, simply there are no allegations in this complaint, factual allegations or supporting factual allegations to support that inference. There is no allegations that there's a connection between Hamas and the Boycott National Committee. The only allegation connecting the Boycott National Committee is to the PNIF, and that is membership in a coalition. And then with regards to the allegation that Hamas, to the theory that presented by plaintiffs, that because Hamas controls Gaza, anything that happens in Gaza is somehow attributable to Hamas. So even if this court were to infer some kind of connection between the Boycott National Committee and something occurring in Gaza, that theory has no basis in law. Plaintiffs rely heavily on the Boehm Seventh Circuit decision, and even in that decision, the court clearly found that support to a hospital in Gaza that is not alleged to be connected to Hamas is not amounted to support to Hamas. Again, here, this court offers a lot of guidance in its Ashley decision about the kinds of allegations that there showed domination and control of the ministry by Jaish al-Mahdi, which were the ones, which was the group there that was involved or responsible for plaintiffs' injuries. They alleged 70,000 employees of Jaish, of the ministry were members of Jaish al-Mahdi. They showed that the ministry, the allegations that this court pointed to are that the ministry was fully controlled by, what, if you walk through the halls of the ministry, you would have seen posters of Sadrists, you would have seen fighters walking the halls. It was dual purpose. The hospitals were used by Jaish al-Mahdi. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I was just going to ask you, because two members of this panel were on that case, so we're well familiar with the facts of that case. But I just wanted to press you on sort of what is and isn't pleaded in your view. And in particular, I take it that it's adequately pleaded that the campaign was aware that the Great Return Marches were sometimes used as sort of the launching place for the incendiary kites and balloons. There was awareness of it.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The only tweet referencing kites and balloons is, I believe, on referenced and reproduced in paragraph 134 of the complaint. And that references kites and balloons from Gaza, not even from the Great Return March. But in any case, in any event, the U.S. campaign's tweets about the Great Return March only indicate support for protesters' demands of human rights and criticism of Israeli use of lethal force against unarmed protesters, and those are their words. Your Honor, just to underscore, and I see I have a minute left here, to the point on the speech that is alleged to that the plaintiff's allegations here about our client's speech. It makes it clear that this case is about punishing the U.S. campaign for its advocacy in support of Palestinian rights and boycott, which their complaint repeatedly equates in conclusory terms with terrorism. There is no factual support for that egregious and extreme allegation. Plaintiffs make their hostility towards the U.S. campaign's advocacy clear, and that is not enough to grant them, that is not enough to state a claim, and not enough to proceed with their harassing litigation against the U.S. campaign. Are there no further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll hear again from Mr. Lewin, who had sought to reserve time for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor.
We'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal, Mr. Lewin.
The complaint's allegations very specifically describe how the incendiary balloons, which are a terrorist mechanism that has affected American citizens, three American citizen families, were not only supported, but really part of Hamas's Great Return Marches that were celebrated for the release of those incendiary balloons. And we think the complaint has adequate allegations of not only direct liability under the Anti-Terrorist Act, but certainly under the standards of Atchley for the aiding and abetting provisions under JASTA. And consequently, we believe that the decision below should be reversed in light of Atchley. Thank you.
Mr. Lund, for your direct liability claim, there has to be that the defendant proximately caused an act of international terrorism. And I take it that the act of international terrorism that you allege is 2331-1 violent acts or acts dangerous to human life. Is that correct?
That's correct. The incendiary balloons, according to the allegations of the complaint, have threatened the lives and certainly caused great mental anguish to three separate American citizen families living in southern Israel, and consequently are basis for liability under the direct liability provisions of the Anti-Terrorism Act.
And the material, it's material support to terrorists, or is it material support or resources to designated foreign terrorist organizations? I take it it has to be material support to terrorists, because the campaign, the boycott is not a designated foreign terrorist organization.
No, it's material support for terrorism, because the American tax laws, I mean, the astounding thing about this is that contributors who give funds for this to the defendant are able to take tax deductions under 501c3.
Right. I understand that context. So the question about for the direct liability, if it's under 2339, then their criminal penalties for if the supported terrorist commit physical violence with the intent to cause serious bodily injury to a national of the United States, does that mean that for proximate cause it has to be foreseeable not only that there's bodily injury to persons, but that the persons injured are it is a national of the United States? How do we address that?
I think that under the facts of this case, it would be foreseeable that there would be injury to nationals of the United States, because it is, I think, well known, and we can certainly establish at a trial that there are known to be American citizen families living in the area to which the incendiary balloons are released. And consequently, those are not only harmful to Keren Kayemeth and to the forests in southern Israel, but also have a direct impact on American citizens residing in southern Israel.
Thank you, Mr. Lewin. The case is submitted. Thanks.